Fairy tales can come true. It can happen to you if you're young at heart. For it's hard, you will find, to be narrow of mind. If you're young at heart, you can go to extremes with impossible schemes. You can laugh when your dreams fall apart at the seams. And life gets more exciting with each passing day. And love is either in your heart or on its way. Don't you know that it's worth every treasure on earth to be young at heart? You didn't cut me off.
Well, I don't know. What, I thought I was expecting Barbie. I thought Erica was going to sing.
I haven't laughed this hard in a long time, so thank you, Nick.
You can just sing the whole song.
I don't even think I can now. That was nice. And then I'm going to go, hi, Barbie.
Hi, Ken.
I thought you were going to do a whole remix thing, and I was expecting. Yeah.
Uh-huh. If you still want to.
No, I'm.
I got a little left over.
Just, Erica, tilt your mic a little bit. Just tilt it upwards.
He didn't even have a scotch.
Well, that worked.
Like I did.
But I thought you didn't want to do it.
I told you I was going to take it because we were going to go with a Barbie girl.
Oh, but I got to hear the backing. You have the lyrics already, you know?
It's okay. We can pass on.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Ken.
That works. That's good enough. Welcome back. Well, welcome back, Nick. Welcome back, Jonathan. And then also we got a new guest. So, Erica, you're on the show for the first time. And you didn't really sing, but that's okay. You'll get away with it for this time.
Sing enough for the both of us, I think, on that one.
What do you want to call this show? Because you've introduced, right? So you got this ball rolling on this one, and I'm really fascinated about this one.
Yeah, I think that today's biggest discussion is the amount of money that as contractors, we all leave on the table because we're not aware of it, because we're overconsumed.
I mean, can I start being racist and like call this show like the Leprechaun Show where I'm finding money? Like, is that what we can do?
Find the pot of gold.
This show's about finding money that's like on the table that you guys are, as contractors, wasting. You guys are
they're already spending it.
You're spending it already, and you guys are in the business of finding that money that's being spent and saving the contractors this money.
Or helping them spend it in areas that make money.
Yeah.
Instead of
make your business grow.
Spending money. Yeah.
Right.
And also finding processes and systems that work so that at the end of the day, when you go home, you can actually crack open a beer and sit in front of the TV and go to bed and not worry about this, and this.
Yeah. Or if somebody is screwing you over, like a service provider, or I got another bill from, I'm not going to say their name, but their label is blue or red. Or purple and green, or orange, or there's a lot of different labels, fun colors, all screwing.
The telecommunication Canadian industry.
You know, maybe there's somebody that can negotiate what you're spending so that, you know, you can keep your eye on where it is best served, which is making the company money and not dealing with ways that you're leaking money out of your operation accounts.
Isn't it really sad, though, that as Canadian contractors, as business owners, we just accept the number that it is that we're charged for the most part?
Yes, for sure. But it's also it's an education thing, right? I don't know what I don't know until I know it. And who's telling me this? Because I don't have enough conversations with my accountant because I don't know that I need to. I don't have enough conversations with either a business coach or a service like ours where it's, you know, guys, you're spending money here, here, and here. It's costing you 40% too much, and this can be now put here where you can actually make money. Well, those conversations don't happen because more times than not, I didn't know it existed. And ideally, that's what we're trying to figure out, how to get more information to the folks in this industry that are busting their ass every day trying to figure it out and tell them that they don't have to do it by themselves.
Yeah. And I think, can I add something to that?
Yeah,
I think there's a trust factor that gets lost along the way too. In the world that we're in today, you know, that it almost feels like everybody you meet is trying to sell you something and there's supposed to be organic trust when today's conversation is very different. Like where it's going to be about education, and it's also, I love what you said, you don't know what you don't know until you do. But here's the thing. There's a trust factor that's organically going to occur because you're already doing this. We care about you. That's why we've got great people in the room, because we care about everybody else out there. That's what we do this for, man. And we talk about this all the time. It's about helping the trades. It's helping them look through the work.
Advice. That's all it is. It's there, right? So you guys can take it or not. It's up to you and figure out if it's going to benefit you, your business.
I mean, the proof is in the pudding.
Yeah.
When you start having some of these conversations and it rattles that cage, it's not going to take very long to figure out that, holy smokes, you know, what have I been doing all this time? How have I, and luckily a lot of the listeners have survived a lot of different storms. And unfortunately, a lot of them might not make it through that storm because maybe they didn't have those, ask those questions or have that advice at the time that could have put them in a better position. So hopefully more of this stuff is talked about and you guys are trying to figure it out. And it's not just, I'll deal with it when I can deal with it, because that's the other problem. It's, you can't deal with it. If you could, you would have already dealt with it. That money would be in your bank, spent on ways to make money. But there's only so many hours in the day and you're already going home at 6 o'clock to keep working until 10 o'clock. So
it's not a life. It's not a good construction life kind of thing, right? So I want everybody, can you guys, I know you guys gave me the information here, but if you guys want to just share all your information so everyone knows that who's in the actual studio right now. Obviously, Nick, you're back from Revelate. So on an IG again, it's Revelate.inc, right?
At Revelate.inc.
And the website is Revelate.com.
Exactly right.
Okay. And then Erica?
My handles are SchoolyMitchell_Jujo, or you can follow my personal account at the Erica Jujo.
Jujo. Italian?
Yes.
Okay. Not Irish. All right. And then Jonathan?
Well, here I am again, JonathanSinelli.com. Thanks, folks, for following. Thanks, folks, for paying attention and making a difference.
People first.
People first. People first leadership.
And always doing shows with me at TNT as well, too. So since 2015, Groove has been built off the foundation of experience, innovation, and the continued desire to evolve how work is done even after the trade has mastered it. The people at Groove have more than 40 years of experience in the drywall and construction industry. Their commitment to both the growth of the company and the individuals Groove simply calls clients is unparalleled. Their mission is to empower builders, designers, and architects with the freedom to build on their designs, to encompass creativity in all of their projects without sacrificing quality, efficiency, or affordability. They accomplish this by providing production-focused solutions and design workflows that allow builders to overcome their construction limitations through drywall. They see drywall in a different way. Innovate, inspiration, integrity. Groove Industries. Check out Groove Industries at www.grooveind.com and on social at grooveind, and reach out to them on their email orders at grooveind.com or Steve at grooveind.com and Andre J at grooveind.com. And also their phone number is 416-629-3756. Are you looking for a sustainable and durable real wood solution to elevate your next project? Let me introduce you to the gold standard. Thermery, the world's largest and most trusted manufacturer of thermally modified wood and sauna materials. Their wood is like the superhero version of regular wood, stronger, more stable, and ready to take on whatever Mother Nature throws its way. With a wide range of thermally modified wood products from decking and cladding to sauna and statement walls, when you choose Thermery, you're not just investing in quality, you're investing in the health of our planet too. Join countless architects, designers, builders, and homeowners who have trusted Thermery to bring their vision to life. The best way to fully experience the Thermery difference is to hold the real thing in your hands, so visit their website today at www.thermeryusa.com and also find them on IG at ThermeryUSA. Techno Metal Posts have designed and created a series of specialized hydraulic equipment exclusively for the installation of helical pile foundations. A single machine, compact in size, allows the crew to complete installations for even the toughest foundations and tightest spots. It is less disruptive to surrounding areas compared to traditional methods, as it does not require excavation, the use of heavy machinery, or concrete pouring. Another added benefit is the minimum impact on your lawn and surrounding landscape, leaving behind only a small footprint. Both customers and installers alike are highly satisfied with the ability to start construction on their project within a short period of time, even as little as within the same day. In the end, your project was efficient, tidy, and cost effective. Reach out to them at www.technometalposts for your next project. Choose Dahl for your plumbing needs and discover the peace of mind that comes with their unwavering reliability and exceptional service. Experience the Dahl difference and join the growing community of contractors who trust in their expertise and rely on their products. Check out Dahl at www.dahlvalve.com and on social at Dahl Valve. Seeking top-tier windows? Look no further. Payne's Window Manufacturing is the ultimate choice for custom builders, contractors, and homeowners. Visit www.paynes.com now to experience the pinnacle of quality and customization. Get your instant custom quote today. Elevate excellence with us. Plus, enjoy nationwide shipping across Canada and the U.S.
I think based on what you were saying, Nick, I would say that it's almost like the construction industry right now is in survival mode.
I'm hearing a lot of that.
Without even realizing that they're in survival mode right now. So they're actually, they're in the middle of nowhere trying to figure out how to make a fire, and they've got nothing to do it with, right? So they're just trying to survive right now, which is really scary to a lot of, I would say the majority of the industry right now that's never gone through this. Because the majority of the construction industry right now, I think, is in their 30s at the most, maybe mid-40s. So they haven't really experienced the 99, the 09. This is their first one out. And it's a harsh one, too.
Yeah.
So I like what you guys are doing. I like what's happening. I like what Revelate is now doing. You guys are doing this partnership thing now, which is great. So that's what we're going to get into. But first, Erica, why don't we get started with the whole Schooley Mitchell and how this all kind of unfolds and how it works and how it's relatable to who's listening right now.
Absolutely. So what we do at Schooley Mitchell and for a lot of construction companies is we uncover money that you're already spending. And one of the biggest things that I found in construction is they're focusing on the skill, and that's what we're taught in school. The first time I went to university, that's all we talked about was working on this academic paper and nothing about actual experience and how to put a business together. And when you're working on a specific skill and you're pouring concrete, when you get home, you're not thinking about the other parts of your business. You're not thinking about your telecom, your merchant services. You're just thinking to yourself, hey, you know what? I have to have a POS system. I have to have small package shipping. I have to order gas, compressed gases, all of those things. But at the end of the day, people are not understanding that within those services, and let's use telecom as an example, they like to add in all these little fees. And when you've worked a long day and for 15 hours, you don't want to think about those things. You're like, I'll just pay it and call it a day. So what I've noticed in construction specifically is they're not looking at their finances. They're not looking at their P&Ls. They don't even have a spreadsheet with debits and credits. And we're able to fill that gap by saying, here, listen, we're going to take over that role. Here's what we can help you save. Sometimes it could be 10 grand, sometimes it could be 26, sometimes it could even be a million, depends on how big the company is. And that's one of the biggest things that we found in this industry is they're really not looking at the data and the books. They're very focused on pouring the concrete.
When you have the conversation with the person for the very first time, are they, like you were mentioning, completely shocked that this even... that all this money is being missed?
Absolutely.
They just didn't realize it.
I'll be honest, when I joined this organization, I didn't even think something like this existed. I didn't even think that people had somebody on the team to even look at this stuff. So when they see, hey, we can save you $10,000 a year, X amount a year, they get excited about it. And the fact that we can do that without a salary, so we can find all of this information within 2.5 to 5 hours for the entire year.
Just looking at a brand new company that you've never seen before.
Yes.
The way they've set it up.
Yes. And to be honest, within our conversations of what are you finding challenging today and what's going on in your business, everything comes out. And there's a lot of, to be honest, sometimes there's not necessarily tears, but it's very eye-opening for a lot of them.
I would say telecommunications would be the top right now. Is that where the biggest expenses are going?
Telecommunications, yes, but I would say the bigger one is merchant services.
Okay.
And the reason why I'm going to say that, and it's a big topic of discussion, is because you go to McDonald's and now they're looking, they have a tip, right? You pay for something.
Do they?
Yeah, yeah. So if you get a coffee... apparently, I have to tip you now for making my coffee.
I know they're doing that for a lot of restaurants.
Yes.
And I'm being very, very particular if I agree with that tip.
Exactly. So Now, a lot of places are saying, oh, you got to do a tip here, tip here, tip here. And it's not for the employees. It's because the POS system now, they're adding all these extra charges. And they're trying to make up for the charges on the POS by saying, oh, would you like to leave a tip for our employees? But that's not...
It's misleading.
It's very misleading. Because the credit card fees are going up. People are not paying their bills. So the credit card companies got to make money. How are they going to do that?
Why are the credit card fees going up?
They go up for two reasons. If you have a Black Amex card.
Which I don't.
Which you don't. Let's say you have one of those credit cards where you have to pay a high fee. And I'm just using a Black Amex as an example.
Okay.
The merchant has to pay for your loyalty points.
I didn't know that. It comes out of the merchant, really?
Yes.
So is that the same applicable to, I guess, points programs as well, too? So if you're paying an annual premium on that card, that merchant is actually paying towards that?
Yes.
Which they're turning around and transferring that cost onto the consumer then?
Yes. Or what they're saying is, and I'll use my nail salon as the example, they're saying, listen, if you're going to do that, or there's one particular place I go to in Kleinberg, and everyone's got a nice credit card there. They're saying, listen, if you pay cash now, it's this amount. If you pay by credit card, it's this. Or sometimes what they even do is, oh, yeah, our credit card machine doesn't work when I go in there, because they have to pay that fee. The other thing, too, is the credit card merchant, those companies, they like to add on all these little fees. And if you're doing business just in Canada or just in the U.S., there's no reason for a global fee. Depending on how many transactions are going through. Sometimes they'll do it by transaction and not just by, okay, here's the terminal for this month. There's many different little nuances, and excuse my language, but they're making a shit ton of money that they don't need to be making.
Well, it's ATM fees, right? It's just all these little hidden fees every so often that you see that they're pennies to you and me, but they're millions to them, right?
And to businesses, it's costing to businesses in general.
But what you're doing is you're sacrificing the business
by doing
this, right?
Exactly. So now what a lot of people are saying is, hey, listen, and this is something that I do too when I go into a place now. I'll say, listen, is there a cash discount? And a lot of places are starting to do that 5 or 10% so that they could accommodate for the machine fees. So they're building the merchant fees into the service. But if I go to a restaurant and I say, hey, listen, I'm not paying with my card, they'll say, no problem, here's 5 or 10% off. But most people don't have cash.
Right.
Most people don't have $200 in their pocket. A lot of people don't even have $200 in their bank account.
Are the fees the same thing when it starts becoming debit?
A
transaction?
So the debit is more on the consumer, not on the merchant. So if, for example, depending on the type of account that you have, if you surpass 20 transactions as a consumer, you're getting hit with the fees.
Okay, so I'll have 1,000 questions. First, what's a global fee?
A global fee is essentially a fee that is tagged on that allows a merchant to operate in many different countries. So think about if you go to a retailer and you're buying furniture, but that retailer is from the United States and you're buying something and you're in Canada. There has to be a fee incorporated in that bundle in order for them to sell to that particular country. Each country has laws and regulations and rules. And so that fee accommodates to make sure that Nick's credit card, who is maybe in Europe, maybe he's from a European country, coming to Canada saying, okay, like his credit card works, or, you know, things don't bounce back and things like that. It allows the credit card to swipe. It allows it to work. It allows it to scan, or the tap on top. That's what that fee is for. But if you're not doing global transactions, why, you don't need that. And they will tag that on just because.
Is it in the actual receipt? Like it's mentioned in the receipt, in the invoice, or?
Sometimes it's mentioned in the invoice. Sometimes it's mentioned in the terms of conditions. But let me ask you this. How many times have you sat there and gone through the terms and conditions?
Never. On anything.
Exactly.
Never. Hmm. Okay, so this is just really about education at this point, right? Trying to figure out exactly what we... So, yeah, merchant, you have telecommunications, you have fuel. Like, I'm just thinking about contractors, tradespeople, what we go through every day. I think more and more contractors now are actually purchasing everything on credit cards regarding their suppliers now. Now, we're seeing increases in those fees as well, too. So then when we make a purchase through, I guess, an account, a contractor's account, we're not being aware there's fees on top of that.
Absolutely.
So yes, we're getting a discount for being a contractor to get the product that we need, but then we're being charged because of that terminal.
Exactly. So whether you're using your card to go on vacation and collect the points, you're winning there, but you're losing on your credit card, on the terminal, because that's how people are paying you. So to be honest, it comes out to the same thing at the end of the day. But personally, I would rather just, and I'm in the business, I would rather not have a machine so that they don't win, you win.
Let's go back to the old school days of cash, no?
Yeah, good luck with that one.
No, that's not gonna work, right? So you guys go in, you take a business, you assess what's going on.
Yeah.
You literally create a balance sheet, right? You figure out what their expenses are.
So we pray that they have a balance sheet.
Okay.
Or a debits and credits or
something.
Or something.
Well, yes. If they have a legitimate business and they've got an accountant and they're doing some bookkeeping, then they'll have some paperwork for you to look at.
Let me tell you something. A lot of people.
Am I being hopeful? Like, what's,
you're being very hopeful.
Okay.
So a lot of people don't have QuickBooks. They don't have any sort of spreadsheet to demonstrate what's going in or really? What's going out. You would be surprised because, like I said, they're working 15 hours a day. It's always it's like a diet. It's always tomorrow. I'm going to do it tomorrow. So sometimes we have to collect some of those things, or how we work is we say, listen, just give me your bills. So I'll look at their bills and I'll look at, okay, what can we do to save money? Number one, what are you currently paying for? What are you looking at? What are your challenges? And what do you not like about this company? Or if you like this company and you want to stick with them, we'll try to find something within there as well. But to say to them, can I have a balance sheet? Sometimes that can be very challenging.
Wow, you guys see the same thing?
It's the I think the challenge around it is, how do I put this? In case CRA is listening.
They'll probably be on the show one day.
You know what? I'd love to have a conversation with them, but I hope you invite me back for that one.
I'll be zooming into India or something like that. Okay.
We understand the way that this industry gets paid. What a general concern is I'm afraid of the reporting process because I'm going to get burnt. Mm-hmm. So they keep a lot of it very loose so that up here, they know what's going on. But over here, I'm under the radar. So what we're trying to do so that they can both maintain their tax efficient status and have
I get it.
Clarity on what's actually happening on a day-to-day, that's where it's, Erica's looking at it, so, okay, guys, money's being spent A, B, and C, and it should be spent on C, D, and F, get rid of A and B, or let's look at how we can adjust some of the infrastructure so that we're not wasting time here, or let's plug in a QuickBooks and automate some of the functions so that now you have a real-time clock on the ins and outs so that before you leave the job, you're not leaving with just your hands in your pockets or your money's going out and there's a red flag coming up like, hey, wait a second, why did that money come out? Didn't come out last month. These are systems that can be implemented, but back to your point, man, it's an education around what's possible. What's
it's
not
a confrontation
possible.
To the education.
Yeah.
Can I not go to, sorry?
I just want to add one more thing too. And I think some people get nervous because like, oh, they're diving into my finances. And at the end of the day, we're not snitches. Snitches get stitches.
Yeah, that's what I was leading to. I was like, could I not get to you? I go, here's legitimately what my business is doing, and here's a lot of the cash sales that I've done and vendors that I've dealt with as well. And I'm saying that because I've been telling everybody on this show, if you're a contractor and you're not doing cash, then you're stupid. It's as simple as that.
It's yes. Yeah, it would be. And but this is why we're saying, you know, cash can be tracked without it hurting you.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. It's coming to you guys,
yes,
where you yeah have the paper and you have the cash and you're showing the whole picture, but you're not revealing any of this to the tax
person. No, we have compliance regulations to
yeah
adhere to, and businesses to grow. Last thing we want to do, besides getting stitches, is, you know, not be able to service this industry.
So, of course.
It's yeah it's not even our thing to look at. It's not, that part is not my business. What, how you do it is, that's yeah that's all you.
We're just going to tell you that there are options to keep an eye on it more efficiently, so that when you're making a decision, it's an educated decision. It's not, I got cash in the bank, I'm doing okay today.
So roll the Here's bank. The other thing too, is to add into this, you guys haven't touched on it yet, so we'll bring it back up, is if the organization is doing a great job, you're going to let them know. Mm-hmm. Like, high five, you're doing a great job. We're not. It's not coming in from a negative approach to say you know, you're doing a terrible job. No, you want to evaluate it. And if you're doing really well, high five, team. Keep going.
Sorry?
Absolutely.
Am I fair to say that technology has made it worse for the small business owner or the entrepreneur?
Made it worse? No, I would
say. Financially speaking.
In what sense?
In what sense is, like, I haven't met somebody that's under the age of 30 that doesn't have a grocery list of subscriptions.
Oh, yeah. Mm. And
but I have one. And I'm really close to getting rid of that one.
That's a big one. That's a big one.
Everyone is so used to just, like, subscribe. Like,
it's the shiny ball syndrome.
I grew up on Adobe, where I bought the program, right? But then you upgrade software on Mac and shit like that. They force you to actually subscribe now. We all know Dickhead Gates is all about that. So it's like, we grew up buying the programs. So we owned it. And I'm not, like, I've had my altercation with the Genius Bar at Apple, where it's like, I don't want to stream music. I want to own music.
Sorry,
I want to own a copy of that track. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I don't want to stream it. I want to own it. But that's where we're going to. That's what I'm saying, is that even in construction, you can start setting up your business with all this entry stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, all this software. This will help you with here. This will help you with that. And before you know it, you're spending a lot of money. You guys see it, right? Like, you're seeing all this money being spent.
I wouldn't even also say it's the financial component of it that's the issue. It's also, are you actually using all of these tools?
Yeah.
And I came back from a speaking event on Sunday, and that was the biggest thing that people talked about, is what tools are useful, what tools are not. I got to get rid of some. And the biggest conversation today is, I just want one thing and I want to integrate it into one system, have a process. At that point, then you have to start monitoring every single tool. For me, on my computer, it's getting ridiculous about how many tabs I have open, how many dings I'm hearing. Even for myself, I have to start saying to myself, okay, listen, Let's put it down to five different things. Otherwise, how are you supposed to focus and get things done? And even for me, sometimes I'll look at the tabs and I'll take a break and then I start scrolling. It's even hard to focus and create a process. And they might say, oh yeah, you need this project management tool for this, but then you'll get that tool and it doesn't integrate with this and this. And how do you, and then you get frustrated. And so, going back to your point, technology is not only frustrating financially, but also making it seamless. And that's where Nick and Augustino come in with on Revelate.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest focuses right now. It's the simplification of tech. Every day, there's a new product that does amazing things. There is a lot of amazing tech out there. But I don't think it's this particular industry. I think it's people, the shiny ball syndrome.
Yeah,
it's hard to decipher what's the best thing right now. And where we're working, what we're hearing a lot of is, I have these three features I use all the time, and I have these other 12 features I don't use, or it's people are getting mad at me that I even have to ask them to use. So let's cherry pick it. Let's pick the stuff that's working best. Let's get rid of this.
But do they allow you to do that, or is that something that you have to discover to do that?
discover, well, allow.
You guys discover.
Yeah, ultimately, we can work with out-of-the-box products and then automate it so that it works the way that you want to. So this is another thing. Again, when you're strapped for time, you see something, oh, it's a solution, oh, it's going to work, okay, cool, perfect, let's do it. It's a few hundred bucks, who cares? It's going to save me time. But then what isn't recognized is you got to learn how to use it, which isn't a day, which is typically weeks or a month or two. Then you got to get your team up to speed. If you got a big team, if you got a small team, it's still got to get a team up to speed, assuming that they like using tech. So now you got to convince
them.
They
don't. Okay.
So now you got to convince them to use this thing that you think is a good idea, but you don't know how to use yet. So what we're trying to do is okay, wait, what? Why do you have tech? Okay, so this product is great. This particular out of the box solution is the one, but you're only going to use 10% of it. We'll work with that provider and automate the back end so that the other stuff that would be bogging down you or your team is done autonomously.
And they're fine with that? Like all these programs?
Yeah, absolutely. Because we're still going to be keeping that vendor in to provide the service. Now we're just helping the customer use it to its full potential, because that's the problem.
Have you guys done a research on, I have no idea, but how many programs are there now for contractors for construction?
Oh my goodness.
Like, are we hundreds and hundreds of programs now?
Each vertical has countless. And the hard part about software, which is why we often offer custom software. And I say that because a lot of people, when they hear the word custom, they think, okay, I don't want a Ferrari. I need a Honda, or I just want a work truck. That's fine. Technology has evolved now where we can build out internal custom software using low code that's a few grand, not a couple hundred grand. Yeah. The world has exponentially changed as far as what's available and what can be accessed. But what's happening in turn is everybody wants to create a product and push it, and this industry is famous for the love of its tools. So there is new ones coming up every week, every month. That doesn't make them bad. That makes them good. But when product designers create something, they create it around a persona. They don't create it around a unique issue. They create it around three particular types of buyers that fit a broad description. And hopefully, you fall into one of those
descriptions. But you never do. Like, nobody will ever. Everybody is unique, right?
And that's where Revelate is coming in to say, well, okay, this is a great, powerful tool. It fits your budget. It fits your want to understand the software, your skill level with software, and you don't care to learn more. You don't care to become a tech master. I want a tool that works, that saves me time. I don't want more bullshit. Got it. So now let's figure out the tools, the components within that tool that actually help you do what you need to do and automate the rest. Or I have these six softwares. I'm paying $1,000 a month. I'm using two regularly, and every once in a while I go into this. Okay, well, those six softwares, let's turn it into one custom software. Now, instead of you spending $12,000 this year, you're going to spend six. And now you own the software. You have it for your company. It's built to your specs, the way that you run your company, the way that accounting is done, the way that estimating is done, the way that it's all done. You, not me, you. And you own it. You don't have to worry about licensing fees, subscriptions, all that.
So we got started by, okay, you're hoping that people show up with a version of QuickBooks so you get an insight into their business, right? That's where it starts. And then you guys assess it at that point to figure out where are the problems, right?
Yes.
And then you guys work with Revelate together trying to figure out how to put the two together. Is that how it works?
Absolutely, because once we're able to save and understand what they're utilizing on merchant services, telecom, gas, like all the categories that we can work with, SaaS comes up quite a bit, which is software, and where those processes, automations, and systems come into play. And that's a big challenge that they're facing, because like Nick was saying, you get excited with all these different products and services. How do you put it together? What are you using? then you have automation. People don't know how to automate things. They get excited because, oh, I don't have to, I can just automate this now and I don't have to hire this. They don't know how to put the API connection together between softwares. When things get disconnected, they don't know how to match up. It's a whole other world that you can do it, but you can't do it at the same time. It has to be done from a back-end perspective.
Or try. Hey, I will never tell our clients not to try, for the simple reason that the moment you look at a workflow, a back-end workflow of your software and the way that you want it to work, and now the intricacies and the complexities now sit there, and one by one, put it all together, and then test it, and then back test it, and then fail test it, and then do it again. Because now you got to change something and do that. So this all goes back to that. It's, okay, you just finished 15-hour shift. First thing you got to look at is your invoice.
You're not doing it. Yeah, exactly. Simple as that.
Oh, didn't do the accounting. Oh, did you get that estimate out? Oh, wait a second. Better earmark some time for some coding and automating, and then wait, because not all automations get plugged in, and you got to work with the vendor to patch in. So make sure you set up that call with their tech support so that you can work it out. There's a lot of things that happen that, back to the education piece, it's, you don't have to do it all yourself. It doesn't have to cost a bundle. You don't have to worry.
But that's the thing about the cost, is like, there's no, depending on the size of the business, right? But there's no really upfront cost to begin this process, right?
Yeah. There,
because the savings is where you're accounting for the cost, right?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. So how does that work now, if you want to explain that?
Sure. So how it works is, so if they don't have QuickBooks, for example, or we get a list of their bills, that goes into head office. Head office does all of the back end stuff. We come back 4 to 6 weeks later, and we say, hey, listen, here's what we were able to find within your current vendors as well as external vendors. Yes or no. It's very simple. Do you want to save? Do you not want to save? 50% goes to, they save that 50% of whatever we found. We keep 50%, and that happens for 3 years. And people will often say to me, well, why 3 years? Well, in 2007, the financial market, everything was great. 2008, it went to shit. Mm-hmm. So we're there for the health checks. We're there for the good times and the bad times. You might come to me and say, hey, listen, you know what? I'm expanding. I just added 10 more contractors. We need to renegotiate. Or, you know what? My contract is up with this particular vendor. Let's go back to the drawing board. And that's what we're there to do. So you're not always stuck. It's the same thing with any sort of telecommunications company. If you really want to, and whatever your contract is, you can leave what you can leave. You don't have to stay there for the 2 years, the 1 year, whatever it is.
I'm assuming that the first year you're going to find a lot of money being wasted, right? But then it's going to get less and less with each other year, no? Is that the case? Because now you start implementing all this.
Of course.
Right? Okay, but that's the goal eventually. But then also you want to start growing, because now you're making more money because you've saved money. So now you can be more efficient. So you have to continue that efficiency, right?
Of course. Otherwise, anybody can do what they want. I mean, some people will say to me, listen, I'm only going to be in this business for 5 more years, and they're getting ready to sell it. So if they're getting ready to sell, they got to show a broker, okay, here's what everything's going, here's what's going down. So you don't have to grow if you don't want to. Some people want to wind down, but most people want to scale. And if you are scaling, even if you are selling the business, you're going to get more out of it in the long run when you sell.
Turnkey solution. Turnkey business is a hot topic when you're talking about selling a company. A turnkey business means when I come to the office, I turn the key, and the money's still printing. In order for that to happen, you need the systems in place to make sure that the machines are oiled and the money keeps printing.
What percentage do you guys think of contractors, big or small, are thinking that process? They're thinking that someone's going to gobble me up one day. Do you think it's more than 50%?
That's a tough one, but I think it's a big number.
You think so, huh? Well, especially this younger generation of trades?
We're at that paradigm shift, that change of the guard, where the older generation either don't have the younger generation to pick up the torch and actually care.
Yeah.
So they're saying, fuck this, I'm out. I did it. I'm done. 40 years is enough. I'm clocking out. Buy it. Take all of it. Thank you very much.
Or it's buried. Like or you buy it or it's buried, right?
Yeah, so people build businesses to sell. No. Right, and then you know, this is interesting.
What but that's not the older generation. They never did that, and they had the worst paperwork. Like if you were, Eric, if you were doing this back in the 70s, I don't think anybody would look at you with a straight face and going, what are you talking about? I don't understand what you're talking about. My business is running fine. I got work for the whole year. I'm good. But then we didn't have all the technology that
actually did this stuff.
And to be honest, a lot of the boomers that are now retiring still don't understand this side of it, because the tech side and saving on expenses is still so new to them. The way that they're doing business is how it's some for a lot of them is still 1970 style. Some of them don't even have a smartphone. They have a flip phone.
I'm really close to getting a flip phone.
That's actually coming back.
I want a flip phone.
But to add to Erica's point, okay, so when you're selling a company, the numbers that you present,
it's the paperwork that's really critical. You have also to have this, right?
If you're bleeding money from expenses that you haven't been tracking for the last 3 years, because typically they take 3 years worth of numbers, and Erica could have saved you or could have added an extra 200 grand to the bottom line. That now what they do when they sell a company is they apply what's called an earnings multiple. There's a few different methods to which the valuation of a company can be calculated, but typically a multiple is applied. So now if my profit is $500,000 and I have a 3x earning multiple, just rough figures, my business is now worth $1.5 million for sale. But I, for the last 3 years, only reported $350,000. So now that went from 500,000 to 350,000 on average. So now you're applying the same multiple to 350,000. You just lost $500,000 because exactly. You didn't have your paperwork in order. Is that a little bit of money? Is it worth it maybe to
of course.
And that's where I think a lot of eyes are opening because, and this goes back to that point about having regular conversations with an accountant. It's not just a bookkeeper. It's not just somebody that sends it to the tax man. There should be regular conversations. There should be regular attention on where money's coming in and where money's going out. Leadership shouldn't be spending time on it where it's I need to eat, breathe, and sleep this, but they need to know where everything is, and their accounting team or bookkeeper or whoever they have helping managing the finances needs to be having regular conversations with them to say, hey, This quarter, we spent way too much money on this particular material. Or I spoke with Erica, and we just spent $15,000, way too much on telecom or on gas or on tech.
Okay, can I stop this? I'm really curious. What if I was to challenge you and say, what if they don't know? What if they're just over so consumed that the accountant doesn't even... It's not that he or she doesn't know that. That's mm-hmm. ignorant and rude of me to say. What I'm suggesting is they're not aware of what they could or couldn't
I didn't know about any of this until you guys told me about
right?
this.
Yeah. So like,
but that's the point.
I get what you're saying. You're saying, hey, the accounting team, the finance team could come back to you and say, Jonathan, you're overspending here. But what if the accounting team doesn't know, then this is just business as usual. So I'm just spending money. And so the easy thing, the brain is going to say, well, how do I simplify? Is I'm going to go and buy a software and pay a software subscription because
but in all fairness, the marketing of all that software is being designed that way.
Yeah, but then I have to buy software. I feel because if I don't buy software, fear of missing out. I'm the guy who's not buying the software. But now I'm paying a fee, a subscription fee. So it's a negative recurring cycle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then 5 years go by, 10 years go by, we try to sell a company and it gets devalued because you're saying, holy shit.
So I would love to have you, Erica and Nick, I guess without getting in trouble, you brought up the black card. What other cards out there should we avoid? And then Nick, what program should we avoid? I'm not a huge fan of Procore. I'm sorry to say it, because I think it's designed as a huge quilted blanket, like massive quilted blanket the size of Toronto. It's just like it doesn't service everybody, but it tries to service everybody. So that's where I'm going with it, right? So I like making friends. So I'm just trying to figure out which cards to avoid and which softwares to avoid.
I wouldn't point out any specific cards in particular, but I would say the ones where you're putting down a fee and then also you're getting a significant amount of points.
To avoid those.
Yeah, because someone, whether you're going to pay for it or whether the merchant, someone's going to pay for it in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people get excited when they get an Amex Black Card, for example, because like, oh, I have a Black Card. And they just start spend. But the interest rate on that is 22-23% when you don't pay your bill.
Mm-hmm.
So to be honest, I would even try to stay away from a credit card, period, if you can, at most costs. This is more of on a personal side. But if you are spending, if you're utilizing more, I can't remember if it's 5 or 10% of your credit card. That makes up 35% of your credit score on the personal side. The other thing I also heard as well, and
sorry, hang on a sec. Say that again. So if you're spending your credit card on what percentage of purchases?
5 to 10% of the limit. So if you have
of the limit.
Yeah. So if you have so it's better to be honest to have a limit of, let's say, 50K, even though you're not using that. So it shows on your credit score that you're using between 5 and 10%. That makes up 35% of your credit score.
I didn't know that.
Wow. So anyone who's carrying a balance, mm-hmm. they're always actually hurting their credit score.
Yeah. So, and this is non-sponsored.
No.
But if you look at Borrowell, they do soft checks. So there's a hard check and a soft check. Whenever you get a hard check, that's also points against your credit score. But you can utilize, it's like Equifax. You can utilize that service to understand how your credit works, your history, if you missed any payments, how much you're utilizing, also the amount of accounts that you open up. So some people will say, oh, you know, I'm getting all these cards and I got, like, within the first 3 months they're going vacation here and vacation there because they got a free flight. That's points against you. Or if you cancel a card before the year ends, that's also points against you.
Hang on. Two things. So, because we're conditioned to say every time a credit card company calls to increase your limit, say no, unless you need it.
But everybody says yes.
No, say right? yes.
You're saying yes
say
to
yes
do.
Say yes to increase the amount of your limit, but even then don't spend that limit.
And then it's like, what I also think I heard you say, so please clarify, is it for those that use the points to travel,
yes,
that goes against your credit score rating.
No, that's fine.
No, that's fine.
Okay. So if, let's say, for example, I run a business and someone uses a Black credit card.
Okay.
I got to pay for them to use their Black credit card instead of a credit card that would have been $0 and they're not collecting any points.
Right. Got it.
So merchants don't like Black credit cards and they don't like premium annual fee credit cards.
Yes, because they got to pay for that.
They pay for it then. That's why.
But in turn,
they're just increasing the price of their products that they're selling then to cover those costs, no?
They are, but the problem is now the state that the economy is in, people are just racking up their credit card and they're not paying. So it doesn't matter if a card is $500 for the year. They are banking on people not paying, but they're really behind and they're really not paying. That's the problem. So then they're like, okay, well, we gotta make money somewhere, so it's gonna be on the terminals. Mm.
On the merchants, on the small business owners. Okay, which programs? Software.
how long we got on the show?
No, because I saw that post recently, which I was like, this is really cool. You put on like, I don't know, what was it, like maybe 20 or 30 different programs. And I was like, you know what? They're not wrong. There's a lot of software out there for misusing the construction industry.
So Revelate is trying to disrupt the industry, full stop. So if I was to say buy a software, I'd be lying. But what I will say is, because I understand the cash flow is what keeps a company healthy, sometimes we'll propose that you keep a keep tech, because building a custom solution at this stage of business isn't something that's going to help you. So we'll do it incrementally over time. But it's always going to be better to build a custom software that fits your unique company and its style of running than running an out-of-the-box software. Because, again, unless you're that persona to the T, there's always going to be a gap that I can fill to the T. So now what we'll do is we'll say, okay, right now you're using, we'll say Procore as an example, a fantastic tool, but like you put it, it's robust to say the least. That's a polite way of saying, holy smokes, what am I supposed to do with this thing? You have to train with their team for a month.
That long, eh?
They actually, they will provide you with in-service team to walk you through the entire platform. Now, I want you to think about that for a second. Huh? Where's that? When am I giving you that time?
When am I going to do that? Yeah.
Okay. But fine. So, but a lot of these softwares are as complex or have features that may not fit that particular vertical. I'm a plumber, but this thing is built or was originally built for electricians and now is broadening its spectrum into the plumbing market. So, hey, check us out now. So, hey, this is great. They're giving me a discount because they're releasing a beta program. So I'm going to give it a try. I still have no idea what's going to work. This ad is going to be something. It told me that it's going to save me an hour a day. Cool. Let's try it. Whatever it happens to be. So this is where what I would say is first, before you buy anything, stop and ask why. Two, come up with a laundry list of things that you don't want to do. Because I can tell you there is tech out there that will help you do it.
There's probably more things than all the tech software that will not help your business than actually help your business.
Right. And this is why I'm advocating for custom tech, because it can, because of how far technology is evolved and how fast it is continuously evolving, we can build you anything you need your software to do, to the point where we can start augmenting staff members.
Yeah, you were mentioning off mic, you're talking about how you can handle the leads and you can use AI and take care of all the calls.
You can front end, your entire front end system, we can automate it. Now, again, for a small company, that might be a solution because I don't have the payroll to bring on a $70,000 assistant that's gonna, or manager that's gonna take care of the office, take care of the invoicing, take care of the quoting, take care of the ordering, take care of all of this. So I'm gonna do something that is gonna cost me 15 grand this year and maybe 5 grand to make sure that it's running smoothly for the rest of my company's life than the 60 grand I'm gonna, or the 70 grand I'm gonna spend in payroll. But again, it all comes back to, what problems do I have? How can I effectively spend money so that I can scale practically? Because that's another thing. People look at software as a band-aid to all. And then what ends up happening is they got 10 subscriptions they forgot about. They're using one because it's the one that's working right now. But as soon as that's broken or another shiny ball goes rolling across the table, I'm back there and I got 11 subscriptions I'm paying for. That's where that ad came. It's like, I know on average, there are 5 platforms running at all times that you're maybe using 15% of. I know this. And I know that on the other side of it, the big companies, I'm not going to mention any names, but the ones that all of us use, they more times than not add time to our day then take away because of the way we use them. Because again, I was never taught how to use, or I was taught how to use Windows 95 in 95. But now I'm just going to use it because it lets me write things down.
Yeah.
But there are functions in these tools that you don't have to write down anything ever again. So now instead of going home at 7 o'clock and catching up on your emails and sending out those estimates and catching up on your invoicing, it would have already been done for you. And all you would have to do is look it over.
So, and the other one is big that you told me about was the fuel, right?
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure I'm conscious of this. I know exactly how big my fuel tank is. I know exactly how many liters it takes it right to the bare top, right? But a lot of businesses have a fleet of trucks or maybe even whatever, 4 or 5 trucks. And then guys have a jerry can inside their vehicle and they're stealing gas and putting it on the bill.
That's
a norm, right?
That's a norm. Some people are also they're going to the gas station and buying chips and pop and everything
else. And adding it to the same bill.
Adding it to the bill.
Where they sell those items for the most expensive prices as well. You might as well be going to the stadium to buy that stuff.
Exactly. And the other thing too people are missing out on is, let's say they're going to Shell, for example. Your employees, if they're just filling up whenever, they're not going to be looking at, oh, what Shell has, what Esso has, what each gas station has. They don't care. It's not their own personal vehicle.
No.
So they could be, instead of it being 156, or instead of it being 156, why not do something that's 153? But they don't care. When you have a fuel card, you're not only getting a discount, but you have control. And then the other thing too is, if you have an ELD and you're tracking where these vehicles are going, some people make pit stops. Well, why are you making pit stops to go grocery shopping or go to the bank or go to the...
What's an ELD?
It's basically a device.
Oh, locating device. Okay.
Yeah. So a lot of people and landscapers use it, snow removal. So they use it for GPS tracking, storm tracking. Some of them can even tell you how they're even driving. So if they're accelerating too quickly, they're stopping, how they're...
That's why I don't know.
We even build it in for time tracking. So instead of doing paper time tracking, you plug in this particular module. And now, instead of the guys having to punch in, punch out, or send a paper back to the bookkeeping, as soon as they show up within a radius of the job, they're punched in. But it also tells the lead foreman or the PM who's running that job that, wait a second.
The employees are doing their errands on company time, using a company vehicle and consuming company gas.
Yes, and that also...
It's not fair.
That's also another problem because...
Or they're writing on their timesheet, I started at 7:30, but I showed up at 8:25.
I'll use another example. You have this particular truck, and this goes on this particular route. And you say to, even if you tell the company, hey, listen, I'm going to be going, I'm taking my kid to London this weekend, that they're going to university. Can I use the truck? Now you get into an accident. And this is off of what we do. Now you get into an accident. The insurance company thinks, oh, they're just doing this route. Not, oh, they're in another province or they're doing something else.
There could be a dispute there on the claim.
Exactly. So another small, I would even say, tip with the ELD, they don't have it too much anymore, but there's still companies, I believe, out there that have this. So I live in Brampton. The driving is, everyone knows, it's crazy. Around 5 years ago, I used to have this piece in my car that it would go underneath the driver's side, and it was the ELD piece. It would track how I would stop, how I would accelerate if I'm driving at night. And I was rewarded for good driving because I didn't accelerate or I didn't stop aggressively. So if you have a goon of a truck driver and they're doing all sorts of things, you'll know. So then the insurance company will say, hey, listen, for good behavior, we're going to give you X amount or we're going to give you this. So it's not always accurate, and that's why a lot of insurance companies don't have it anymore. But some of them still do, and that's also another little benefit. Not something that I do, but I know it's out there.
But you guys can discover this. When you're getting that box of receipts and you're looking at this box of fuel receipts,
yeah,
you can analyze it all and see, like, there should be a pattern. If it's a company and they've got a route and they've got different job sites, there's a pattern there, and you'll be able to see increases in that pattern, which means more fuel consumption or purchases in stores or other location drop-offs or what have you, right? You guys will discover that.
Exactly. And some people will say, oh, it's just $10. But
it adds up.
It adds, yes.
A lot.
And then you also have this. So if I go to Shell now and it's $156 and I have a fuel card, it's like going to Costco and getting gas. Why not take advantage of 10 cents off, 5 cents off? Instead of having a credit card that the minimum spend is, let's say, $2,000, and then you get the 10 cents. Mm. It's another option. Or if, you know, they do want whatever snacks and everything else, you can accommodate for that budget as well. But it'll flag it and show, hey, this is what they spent on this or at this stop.
I have a curiosity question about the vehicles. Do you ever get into, like, historical data to know that the F-150s operate at this level? So if it's outside of the range of tolerance,
it's inefficient. In other words, is this gentleman or lady leaving this truck idling all day long? Can you get that granular with it to know where the savings are? Are we there yet?
You know what? That's a great question. And to be honest, that's something that I'd have to look at. I don't think it's that granular there yet to understand if it's idling, because you might be at a, you might be in a drive through.
Well, this just becomes, my brain traffic. goes to also even machinery, right? Heavy machinery. Well,
we did a show with a cybersecurity consultant, and if you have any vehicle today that has a connectivity component to it, so your phone connects to it automatically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're recording a bunch of data as you're driving, and that data is being sold to insurance companies.
Well, Tesla's not a car company.
No, it's a data company.
It's a data company.
Yeah, data right. on four wheels, I know. That right. sounds really badly when it backs up. It's an annoying sound. Can't stand it. But so other than the fuel, other than that, where else are you guys looking at trying to figure out, because you guys are literally finding pennies, right? But these pennies are adding up to dollars, adding up to thousands of dollars, right? That's the whole point here.
Shipping is huge. There's a reason why shipping companies make billions of dollars. And it's because a lot of people don't understand how logistics work or how to get something from, let's say, China to Canada. And it's something that even I had to learn as well when I had my own Amazon store. So let's say, for example, you get something shipped from China and it comes to Canada, or there's a pit stop in between. Who's going to pick up your shipment or sign something off if it's landing in Brazil and then it has to come to Canada? Now it's sitting in a yard. You have to pay for it to sit there. Shipping companies, again, just like telecommunications, probably even worse, also like to add on all these little fees that don't need to happen. Waste management is probably even bigger.
With fees?
Yeah. So sometimes they'll say, yeah, we're gonna charge you this. And then 6 months down the line, oh, no. We're going to do this now because of inflation. Inflation doesn't go up 15%. So that industry...
They just pad it and you hope that you just pay it.
Yeah.
Without any dispute.
And waste management, the way that the industry is, they even told me, because before I got into Schooley Mitchell, I was actually going to get into a waste management company. And they told me, they're like, you don't have enough skin for that game. Because it's very... I don't want to say like Russian roulette, but they will argue with anybody to say, here's what it is, this is the price, and that's it. There's a reason why it's on The Sopranos. We'll just put it out there.
Well, there's a reason why there's such big organizations that are running waste management.
Yeah.
Yes.
Huge organizations, right? I get it. I understand it. Okay, so waste management is one. So we deal with that all the time in construction.
Yeah.
All the time.
And what do you just buy a bin? Okay.
Or the I know, bin. But there's fees, the and then we just eat it, and then we're yeah. just not.
The exactly cost of a bin is this much today, yeah. and that's it. All right.
And you're like, I have to get this out, or especially on site, we have to fill another one, or whatever it is, you have to get it out. So, waste management, compressed gases, fuel, small package shipping, ELD is a big one. Another one, it's not so big in construction per se, but break room supplies. Sometimes even uniforms like hats, vests.
It's part of it.
That's part of it, right? But sometimes they'll give a credit and say, here, go to Mark's Work Warehouse or, Princess Auto or places like that as well. But all of those together, depending on the size of your company, you're looking at between 10K for a small company, a bigger company 26, all the way up to a million that you can find in all these little fees.
So I used to always put espresso machines on the job site, right? Nespresso, simple.
That's
ones.
A necessity.
I know. So I would have the pods until one day I had one dickhead trade complain that there was no pods on the site, right?
Okay.
So what did I do? I took the machine away, right? Just to prove a point. The machine came back the very next day. But how do I streamline those pods? How do I streamline those kinds of little perks that make my business a little more unique and attractive to the trades to be on the site? What can I do? Or what can you guys help me with?
That would be a good one. Any supplies? And I think the best thing to do is ask the employees, what do you want? Or what do you need? And I think from there, that's what you can decide too, what you need in your break room or what they're looking for. Do they need a microwave? Are they coming in with microwavable food, yeah,
see,
water?
That was my thought process through that, because I started in the early days seeing guys leave the job site to go do a coffee run. Guys leave the job site to go do a coffee run. You don't know when they return.
Yes.
So if you start, and that's exactly what it is. I started setting up proper food stations where you can properly heat food. You can choose a microwave if you want, or a crock pot, or whatever it is, right? But you'd have the espresso machine. You'd have everything there, all utensils, plates, and everything like that's all ready. It's part of the expense of running the business. But I looked at it like you're creating more efficiency out of your employees, right, or your sub-trades. That's how I looked at it.
The other thing, too, for the guys that are getting set up that don't have the bills yet, that don't have the subscriptions, that
good
don't...
point.
These guys, let's start from the ground level, and instead of just blowing your brains out on whatever makes sense at the time or in that moment or what people are telling you, you know, that's where we can say, well, this is what's working, this is going to cost you too much money, and here's why, and set you up so that right out of the gate you're working with providers and vendors that aren't going to end up costing you time and money in the short and long run of it.
I'm sure you guys have all seen it. Like, I mean, construction is good for this, where a lot of people are proud of their brand. So they start creating a bunch of their own swag and they start giving it to all the employees. Everyone starts looking like uniforms, which is all great, right? Mm-hmm. And as Canadians, the way that we are, it's always great to do local, but local is not always the most cost-effective way to do it. Is it worth going through the whole Shopify and setting up an account and doing the drop shipping coming from China or coming from the States or whatever? Are those expenses that we could probably avoid?
This could be a whole episode in itself. Nick and I had like a long conversation last week about drop shipping and how to get something started.
Okay.
So I think you have to look at it from two perspectives here. If you want to create merch, I think you need to create one separately for your employees and one for the general public. Because, I'll give you an example. When I used to work for the city of Brampton, we weren't allowed to wear our merch not during working hours. Because if I do something off of those working hours, that reflects the company.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. Second thing is, personally, now that I've opened up two stores, I would use Amazon because Amazon has the reach. People are on there every single day. They're getting their product within 2 days. Versus with Shopify, you got to start a new store. You got to spend money on marketing. There's all these other widgets. Again, it comes down to software. What do I need? What do I don't need? It gets overwhelming. They hook you in with, oh, it's going to cost you $349 a year. Instead of WordPress saying, oh, we're going to charge you X amount and there's all these things that you can build. But they know exactly what they're doing. This widget costs $10. Oh, okay, it's just $10. Yeah. And then this costs this. And it has limitations. So I would say maybe even use a different provider other than Shopify. Shopify is great. But how much do you want to scale with it would be the question. And then also, personally, I would pick Amazon over that.
So you would set up an Amazon account to sell your merch on the Amazon account?
Yeah, and actually what I would do is, to even before even printing anything, they actually have print on demand. So if you wanted to print the construction life, instead of saying, yeah, you know what, I need to order 10 t-shirts, or I'm going to order 50, they print it on the demand now so that, okay, if someone orders it, it's printed. Okay, it's at their house in 2 days.
My mind just got blown. Like, how do you get? That's how you get shit to the world.
Where's it? Like, okay, so who's printing it for you?
Amazon.
Amazon's doing it where? In North America, or I don't know, where is it?
That's, you know what? That's actually a great question. I would assume that it's being done at the warehouse here.
Yeah, that's what I'm figuring, because logistically they have to figure out what's the quickest way it could be produced, and then the quickest way it could be shipped.
Yes,
it can't be halfway around the world.
Exactly. And that's why you see all these people on TikTok and Instagram where they have all these print on demand businesses. They're creating all these journals on through Canva and then saying, Amazon, I need you to print this. and they're even if they're making like $2 or $3,
adds up.
It yeah, if you create 10 books, like that's a side hustle.
What's it cost to set up an Amazon account for sale?
So the seller, I have to get back to you on the number for the
I was just curious about it.
But the print on demand. So here's the thing: you have Amazon has many different facets. You have print on demand. You have Amazon influencer. You have FBA. You have a one where you can open up an account and I can resell this phone. And then I'm trying to remember, there's like five altogether. So there's five different ways that someone could make money on Amazon. But that's, I can go down a rabbit hole. That's a whole.
No, because I like that contractors are setting up and they start coming up with merch that actually is attractive looking, and you never know, there might be a market for it. And that's more revenue coming into your construction business for what? For something that you created.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Which is beneficial to them, right? And it's funny that you bring up the Shopify and you bring up the WordPress, because I've gone down those stupid rabbit holes, right? It is a fee on top of a fee on top of a fee. And I got to the point where like, I'm done with your fees, right? I'm over with this shit.
Not to mention, you could set it up yourself. Huh?
I can't.
What?
No.
What am I doing? Where do I start? Yeah. How do I start?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You need to hire somebody to do it.
Amazon, you still have to pay fees, of course, for marketing to put, you know, this product out, this and this. But because they are so powerful and they're doing this at accelerated rates now, you might as well just do that. Now, I wouldn't say to stay on Amazon forever. If it works, you know what? Move it into a Shopify store when you have the money to do so. And if you're producing X amount. But to start, you got to think about how much marketing you got to put out for an online store. And I can tell you from working in the marketing space, you're going to need between like 10 to 30K just in marketing. Never mind everything else.
And that's faith money. That's not guaranteed money. That's you have to spend and know for case. 6 months.
No, but you're also talking about if you have a lot of tradespeople that have social media presence and they've built an audience, they can use that as a stepping stone to already get the attraction out there. You're talking about Amazon and getting it out there for the general masses, everybody out there. But if you're trying to get bottleneck right to people that are
even
in this
for
industry,
simplification, because now I don't have the setup costs of Shopify or WordPress and all the other stuff. Now I don't have the marketing dollars, because every time you open up your screen, Amazon is there. They've already done your marketing for you. There's an Amazon logo on your doorstep that morning already.
What I really like about it too is, and technically you can even do a smaller mass, right? Even if you're just, even if you're doing print on demand, that's why it's there. It's there so that you don't have to have 1,000 units sitting in their warehouse. Now, what I really like about that piece of it, or let's say you do have something in FBA, instead of setting up, let's say, an affiliate program, I can say, hey, Nick, do you like my shirts? He goes, yeah, I do. He wears it. And then if he creates a video on it, you can sign up to become an Amazon influencer. He gets paid every time someone watches his videos. Let's say the shirt is, I don't know, $26. He'll get $1 from that. So you're also killing two birds with one stone. Because that's the other piece of it too is, yeah, you have to market it. But now the biggest shift is who's talking about your brand. And it's all about influence and user-generated content. It's not just, oh, I did this driveway today. Look how nice it is. It's the consumer saying, look at this driveway. Look at the detail. Yeah. Look how perfect it is. They did it all in one day. Look at the staff. Like it's a lot more effort that gets put into it. So you also have to consider that piece of it too. Okay, Mike, who am I going to hire now to represent the brand?
Well, you could be as the owner. You could be your own influencer if you wanted to be, right?
What time are you scheduling that in?
Yeah, I know. That's the other thing. It's just more and more things to do it. Well, I'll get you guys to do stuff, so it gives me some time so I can do that stuff. I want to ask you guys, are we just going to see these fees increase over time? Are we just going to see more software programs coming out of the woodwork? This is all, that's going up, and there's going to be more of those.
I was actually in an interview last week for a company out in the UK, and they were they're starting to build the software, and they wanted to know how it's going to work in the North American market.
They're looking at the numbers here.
They're looking at the numbers. Who's going to
use it? Percentage of whatever the population is that's going to use it, and if it's ROI worth it, right?
ROI, what's their pain points, all of that stuff.
Product development is cornerstone of innovation. It always has been. Now that technology, artificial intelligence, all this stuff is in everybody's mouths, not just people that use it or that create it, it's that much easier for people to start thinking about, hey, I'm gonna do this myself. I don't need to go to school to study this. I'm gonna sit in my basement for a couple hours a day and try and work this out, because that's possible. And now I can take this piece of tech that nobody's thought of, get it backed by venture capital money, and maybe take a run at this. And what do I got to lose? I still live at home with my mother. That's the kind of game that tech is and has been for the longest time. And it will continue to be, because as tech evolves, it gets easier, hopefully, to use. And the challenging point that we're trying to solve is the overuse, the complexities that are unnecessarily added to the paradigm. There's a lot of great stuff. I don't think that adding new software is a bad thing. Bless you. I think it's a great thing, but I think that every tool has its purpose. If I try to use a screwdriver to put in a nail, or I got a lot of nails and all I got is a screwdriver, give me a different tool, please. But if I had a screwdriver and a hammer and complained that I have too many tools, you know.
I think the increase of software, whether it's financial and the amount that's coming in, is not something to be scared of. And we talked about on camera we're talking about the AI and the calls. And I think you said it was around 12,000. So 12,000 a year versus now I got to pay someone to make those calls. 12,000 versus a salary. I actually have somebody right now doing 1,000 calls a day. Well, it's a team, but 1,000 calls a day, and I'm sitting here. It's not something to be scared of. It's something to say, what's out there? What can I implement? And how can I use human capital to make it better? Reality is we all have between 5 and 6 productive working hours in a day. After that, our productivity goes down. So if I can automate something and say, hey, you know what? Can you focus? Here are all your new tasks. Now I don't have to worry about hiring somebody else in the office or doing this or doing that. So it's not something to say, oh yeah, it's going up and something to be scared of, but rather here's what's changing and let's utilize it. And we talked
to you adapt.
Yeah.
Right? You adapt. And it's like talking about, you were saying how people in the 70s are, the way that they do business now versus before is very different. And now, you know, when people have to buy the business and we're talking about cash, I'm not done with Schooley Mitchell. There's a tsunami of people retiring, and because they haven't done things properly, they're going to make me rich if I keep buying business after business, because it hasn't been reported. I went to a laundromat, and most of it is cash. It's all in the coin machines.
Yeah.
This lady was trying to sell her business. If I bought that, I would have won, because you either get pinched now or you're going to get pinched later. Decide.
I'd love to get an idea on your thoughts on, is it more cost effective, beneficial wise, I guess, for the business to lease a new vehicle versus owning an older vehicle and maintaining that older vehicle?
Okay, so I'm not an accountant, but you have to look at I just bought a car, right? Now, for me, I bought it outright, so now I can only write it off for this year because I bought it outright. If you lease a vehicle, it depreciates per year, right? But you also have to look at, the rate is 6% right now. And for my car that I have now, it was $750 a month. I drive a Honda CR-V. I'm not driving a Mercedes. A Mercedes, I went to go look at it. It was $1,200 a month for the 300 series. That's not even like the nice one. It's just the base. So you have, in my opinion, is you got to talk to an accountant and understand what you can and cannot do, because here's the other piece of it. You're taking in cash, and if you're, again, like CRA, don't come for me, but if you're not paying taxes on that cash and putting it under the table, and you have X amount that you're making, the GST, it has to match what you're putting into that car.
Yeah.
So that I don't know, that's my
I'm just
take
trying
on
to figure
it.
Out the cost, because you get a lot of these younger trades that are just buying a brand new vehicle. They take advantage of the CRA, so then you're right. The lease payment, you can write that off. But the interest extra that you're paying on that for a brand new vehicle, plus the increased cost of that vehicle versus an older vehicle and the threat of maintenance associated with that vehicle, you can only write off so much of that older vehicle, but you could still write off the maintenance costs on that vehicle. I'm trying to figure out which number is beneficial to be more profitable. I get the feeling the older one is, the older
vehicle. So one thing I want to add to that is, first off, the amount of knowledge you have around what you can write off.
Mm-hmm.
Is a big difference than what most people understand. True. Around writing something off.
Yeah.
Which I think is a problem. So I could write off my car. Perfect. Top of the line, let's do this. I could write it off. But you can only write off A, B, and C, which means that $1,200 a month that you're spending on that F-150, beautiful truck, but $1,200 for something that's supposed to be making you money, and it's costing you money, and you can't write the whole thing off. And if you don't report this thing, it's actually going to bite you in the bum. Mm-hmm. Speak to the accountant first.
Yeah, there's a cap you can write off, and the rest becomes...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But talk to an accountant.
Yep.
Yep.
Have that conversation. If you don't have one, find one. Get your bookkeeper to...
And talk about a hidden fee there, because there's now a luxury tax fee attached to any vehicle above $100,000 now.
$100,000.
There's that, and then also... For a while, people were getting G-Wagons because it's over a certain amount in weight. So that goes into a different category. But again, how much are you making? Because that car is $300,000.
For the one without doors. For the one with doors and a steering wheel, it's $350,000. Like, I mean...
And they're the most highly stolen, actually. But.
So I guess basically the idea is that if you're listening to this, don't be afraid of confronting your numbers and trying to figure out exactly right. What's going on. And you guys will review this and understand that you'll educate these owners and these people that are operating businesses where to find money.
And even if we don't know the answer to certain questions, like today you asked me about, okay, with Amazon, right? How much it costs, right? Last time I paid for it was $36, or with the car, is better to talk to a CPA.
Yeah.
If I don't know something, that's why we're a team. And I will send you to the right people, or to the people that you want to be speaking to, because when we get into that discovery call, it's like sitting in a barber's chair. It becomes a therapy session and everything just comes out. So whether it's me, whether it's Nick, whether it's you, you know, at the end of the day, you have to have your circle of people. So it's not just even the finance realm. Off camera, we talked about the legal piece,
Yep. Marketing,
whatever it is. We've come together now to even have that ready in place for you to make that next move.
Understand it. Get the right education about it. Get the right expectations about it, because marketing is easy and everybody can do it as long as you got an Instagram account. But there are expectations you need to be aware of, and a budget that needs to be set, and an understanding around that budget so that you know what you're getting into and you're prepared. Because in 6 months, when you haven't made anything from your Instagram account because you're not doing the work, because nobody told you that you had to, because it was just easier to set up an Instagram account.
I actually think now is a really good time to do this. Like, there's two good times. When you hurt yourself and you physically can't do the job anymore. And second, when the economy's turning.
Yeah.
And you can't get the work that you want, and you might as well not be drowning yourself in sorrows about trying to figure out where my next dollar is going to be. Try to figure out how to save your next dollar.
This is the time to restructure, right? This is where you're going to rebuild and say, like, how do I get better?
Yeah.
People don't drown by jumping in. They drown by staying in the water.
I just have an image of sharks. I don't like sharks. So,
all right, I got to do the 12 questions with you, Erica. You guys have already done it, so you guys get a pass on that. Everyone wants to sing,
so thank goodness.
Okay. No, there's no more singing.
Should I be scared?
No, these are just terrified. Don't worry. Personality. There's no ink block test or anything like that. It's just so you share your details again, there, Jonathan.
People First Leadership, JonathanSanelli.com, 416-717-4139.
Erica Jujo, 416-605-0193, at SchoolieMitchell_Jujo, Jujo, or at the Erica Jujo.
Are we connected on LinkedIn? Probably not. No.
Maybe. We'll find. We will be now.
I'll double. Like, I got so many connections on LinkedIn.
You can find me on LinkedIn and Instagram by searching up Nick Bartella. Nick at revelate.ca.com, both work. Revelate.com, revelate.inc for Instagram, and YouTube soon for how to's. So yeah, you guys can start fiddling around
with some YouTube of the channel stuff under Revelate.
Yep, revelate.inc. Nice. We're gonna, so that you can start fiddling around with some of the automations, try to do it yourself, try and just problem solve some of the simple stuff. At least you can get back to work and not go bananas because something broke.
What's your favorite construction word or phrase?
Ooh, construction word or construction phrase.
Phrase.
I'm going to go with Bob the Builder. What's that? What's that?
I don't know where we found her.
There's also the Mexican version too. Have you seen that one?
No, I'm trying to think.
It's such a racist cartoon from Disney, eh?
Manny, is it really?
Yeah, he talks to all of his tools and they all have like accents, like Mexicans.
So I'm going to say, what is it? Can we fix it? Yes, we can. So maybe not my favorite, but you know, to be honest, it's one that sticks, has stuck.
Least favorite tool?
Many of them in the garage. I'm going to say the solder gun because in physics in university, or not university, in high school, I was using it completely wrong. So I was trying to melt plastic together and they're like, no, that's for electrical stuff and to put wires together. And my whole garage smelled disgusting for an entire week.
Yeah. What do you miss from childhood?
I'm not utilizing the phones the way that we do today and actually communicating with each other.
What do you mean, like a rotary dial?
No, just
I have one of those.
I actually have one.
It's the best thing ever.
With a cord?
Yeah.
Did you have like a 20 foot cord or something like that? I have to go through rooms. No.
It's a digital phone, but
it has a rotary on it. Yeah. Okay. I agree with you about communication.
Like actually picking up the phone and saying, hey, you want to hang out tonight?
Right.
What construction sound do you love?
I'm going to say, that's a great question because I watch a lot of those Instagram videos where it's like ASMR. So definitely not the drill or a hammer. Oh, that's a good one. Let's come back to that one.
Favorite beverage?
Wine.
Red or white?
Well, you're Portuguese, so I'm going to have to go against the grain and say red.
I'll drink anything with alcohol in it. What turns you on and off in construction?
I would say what turns me on is the ability to work together to create something. Like whenever I watch HDTV, I love to see how everything comes together. What turns me off is all of the bullshit, the gossiping, and not communicating with each other. I would say that's when I hear some of the things, I'm like, you guys are worse than girls. Like, geez. Like sometimes I think about it. I'm like, I worked with all girls at one point. It's like, I hate this. And then I was working with all guys at one point. I'm like, oh my God, they continue the gossiping after work and call this person, and this person. Go find something else to do.
But we just do it just to create a shitstorm. That's all. We just want to cause and effect it.
Yeah, which is even worse. We just go shopping.
What's your favorite curse word?
I'm going to say the F word because it can be used in so many different capacities.
Favorite vehicle, any mode of transportation?
Favorite vehicle.
Any mode.
Any mode?
Anything at all.
My favorite right now is the Fiat 500 because I think it's so cute.
Look up Fiat 500 accidents.
Accents?
Accidents.
Oh, accidents?
Quickly.
It's a tin. It's a tin can.
Listen, I like to look at
I'd rather have
it.
The old one.
The old one is metal. Nice.
Like, that you would survive. The new ones?
I like looking at it. I mean, there's a reason why it's called
the Fiat. The canvas roof?
And there is a new one. It's electric, but I do like the wheels.
How did the Italians let that happen?
I don't know.
But no, it's not the Italians. It's Chrysler.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's why they let that happen.
Yes. I like looking at it from a distance, but there's a reason why it's called Fiat, and that stands for Fix It Again, Tony.
I haven't heard that one in a while. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt one day?
I would really like to attempt, I would say, in the cosmetic space, because I have a patent in the cosmetic space, and I want to attempt that whole industry altogether and see how to bring it to life. And I haven't done so yet.
What profession would you not like to do?
Would I not like to do? I would say be a teacher in this day and age, because it's really hard to transform their minds, and it's also one of the hardest jobs.
I agree. Back to what construction sound do you love?
I still don't know. Did
you
oh
think
my gosh.
He's going to forget?
Huh? I know. I was hoping he's going to forget. You know what? I'm going to say sanding. And it's not because of the sound. It's because of that action that you see when it becomes smooth. And it's satisfying.
I like that. Last question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
What would I like to hear versus what I'm actually going to hear is two different things. Could be things.
Both. Could be both.
I would say not even just God, but just in general, people told me to relax and calm down. And everything happens for a reason, and you don't need to be so, everything happened the way that it happened. Mm. And it is what it is.
Thanks, guys. That was great. Nice to finally meet you and talk. And then thanks for having come back, Nick. That was great. Jonathan, thanks for setting this up.
My pleasure.
It's all good. Everybody's interested, just reach out. The show notes will be there. So I definitely encourage everybody to reach out and have a conversation and check it out. Simple as that.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Right here.